Good afternoon. This is the premiere edition of Richmond Independent Radio News for April 1st, 2004. I'm George Goodrich. This week on Richmond Independent Radio News, we talk to 3rd District Councilman Christopher Hilbert about affordable housing. We will also talk to Mark Leslie, who works to reduce homelessness in the River City. And we'll take a look at a unique Southside art space that has changed how some artists live.
There were a lot of artists in town who were working in unheated studios in unsafe parts of town and breaking the ice off the toilet before you could get going.
On April 2nd, 1865, Robert E. Lee gave the order to evacuate Richmond. 2 days later, President Abraham Lincoln toured the former capital of the Confederacy with his son Tad. Now the news.
For WRAR News, I'm Matt Beckwith. The Church Hill neighborhood of Richmond has recently seen much in the way of property development. City officials gathered with developers Tuesday to break ground on the latest project. WRAR's Lauren Ball has this report.
The Noldy Bakery building has been a Church Hill landmark for over 100 years. On Tuesday, city officials joined developers at the site to announce a new $20 million project. The Noldy Bakery condominiums will occupy the historic building when the project is completed in late 2005. City Councilwoman Dolores McQuinn was instrumental in bringing the Marathon Development Group to Church Hill and to the project. She believes the condominiums will provide affordable housing in the area while preserving its rich history.
It's close proximity to downtown. You know, jump on a bus, you can walk. This is an ideal location. You know, the cradle of our nation began right here. And so I think this is all the reason why they should live here.
The condominiums will range in price from $200,000 to $400,000. Mayor Douglas Wilder feels that projects like this one are an important step in Richmond's development. For WRIR News, I'm Lauren Ball in Church Hill.
This week saw an increase in the rhetoric surrounding the Shaco Bottom Stadium project. WRIR's Michael Doolin and Kendall Perkinson talked to both sides of the issue at a rally in the Bottom.
On Tuesday, March 29th, the baseball season started early. At the 17th Street Marketplace in Shaco Bottom, fans of the proposed baseball stadium gathered. A carnival-like atmosphere filled the air. As the Church Hill Trombone Choir played, supporters threw baseballs, ate barbecue, and listened to proposals made for the stadium. Bruce Baldwin, general manager of the Richmond Braves, mingled with supporters.
It's a small indication of what could happen. All the people milling around and going from one place to another and just kind of being excited about being down in the Bottom.
Meanwhile, those opposed to the stadium slowly amassed beneath the historic marker on Broad Street by the highway overpass. This starting point was chosen because it is the site of the execution of the slave rebellion leader Gabriel in 1800. These protesters stood too far away to hear the cheerful music. They gathered to oppose the stadium, which they feel will desecrate a slave burial ground not far from the building site. At 5:30 p.m., they began their walk to confront the baseball backers. When the protesters arrived, they stood off to the side, held banners, and chanted. Those there for baseball could not ignore the intruders. The band music was turned up, protesters chanted louder, but it was obvious that the party could not continue. Elizabeth Camborneum said the proposed stadium would permanently destroy a site of historic significance.
I've done some research on the area, on the Negro burial ground, and on some of the slave sites down here, and if they tear it up and build on it in 50 years when they want to get rid of the stadium, it'll be lost permanently. You can't get it back once you've messed it up.
But Brian White, who works for a company that owns property in Shaco Bottom, disagrees with the protesters.
If this land is important, it certainly hasn't been treated as if it was. It's been neglected forever, and it confuses me that people wait until there is an economic development possibility for the city to decide that land that they have neglected for who knows how long is all of a sudden sacred.
The band played until it had finished its last set, then packed up and left. The protesters, feeling they had been heard, left peacefully, leaving the debate for another day. For WRIR, I'm Michael Doolin in Shaco Bottom.
More than 500 high school students have converged on Capitol Square this weekend. They are participating in the YMCA's Model General Assembly. Each student takes the place of a state-elected official, senator, or delegate. The students have drafted over 100 pieces of legislation to be considered by Saturday. The model legislature will debate bills covering physician-assisted suicide, frivolous lawsuits, income tax credits, and the governor's term of office. Virginia's actual governor, Mark Warner, addressed the students soon after they were sworn into office.
My hope is that you'll come away from this experience recognizing that the most important thing about public discourse is that it should be conducted with a level of civility and respect. And respect even for those with whose opinions you disagree.
Senate Committee Chair Corey Catron says they will not consider any legislation banning droopy pants this year. After the session concludes, a report on the students' debates will be presented to state legislators. The National Weather Service forecast for Richmond is for rain this evening, with a chance of thunderstorms after midnight, lows in the lower 50s. Saturday, showers and thunderstorms in the morning, then partly sunny with a chance of showers in the afternoon. Locally, heavy rainfall is possible. Breezy with highs in the upper 60s. Sunday, mostly cloudy and breezy, highs in the mid-60s. This is WRIR News.
WRIR News needs your help. News gathering requires a lot of time and effort, not to mention money. We are in great need of quality equipment to bring you the best news possible. If you want to hear in-depth investigative local news on the radio, please call the station at 915-7128 to make a donation or to find out how you can volunteer. Again, that number is 915-7128.
Now WRIR's got a brand new bag. It's the Brown Bag Lunch Special with your host, Kathy B. Tuesdays at 12:30 here on WRIRLP, Richmond Independent Radio. Radio for the rest of us. Hear what's happening in your community, because WRIR's got a brand new bag.
Papa's got a brand new bag.
This is Richmond Independent Radio News. I'm George Goodrich. At any given time, nearly 1,400 people are homeless in Greater Richmond. For most of us, that number is just one of many statistics we are bombarded with every day. But for more than 90 agencies in the Richmond area, each number represents a human being in need. Homeward is one such agency. They coordinate homeless services in Greater Richmond, bringing groups together to share resources and fill gaps in the system. Mark Leslie is a research and data analyst for Homeward. He says the homeless often don't fit neatly into categories.
I mean, homelessness is anyone. I mean, anyone can become homeless. Anyone from people who have, you know, master's degrees and well-paying jobs to people who barely got out of middle school and who are, you know, on drugs. It can be anyone. Homelessness is like any group of people has a lot of subpopulations. There's no real one kind of person who's homeless. Everyone is very different. So we have all sorts of people here. We have people who are on drugs, people who aren't, people who are employed, people who aren't employed. By and large, it's people who don't have resources or who didn't have resources and don't have the ability to afford housing.
Is there an average homeless person in the Richmond area?
No, there really isn't. I mean, we have some stats of people, of things that are, for certain things you could look at and say, half of all people have the following trait, but there's not a lot of traits that really half more people qualify for, or that when you combine together, a lot of people meet them. So there really is no typical homeless person in anywhere, and that's because the situation itself is so unique. To become homeless, so many things have to kind of happen in the wrong order, looking at personal issues, looking at failures in housing and failures in jobs and failures in family and friends and support systems. So that it's such a unique kind of situation that there really is no typical homeless person.
Are there trends in homelessness in Richmond? Is it growing or is it shrinking?
Trends in growth and shrinkage and homelessness is really hard to pin down for our community, for any community for that matter, largely because trying to count people who are homeless is like trying to count fish in the sea. If I said to you, go and count the fish along this 10-mile stretch of beach, you know, you really couldn't do that unless you like built a wall around the ocean or something like that. So with homelessness, it's the same way. We can make estimates, we can do our best to count, but to really know about growing and shrinking is really almost impossible to really know. We're looking more at how fast are people moving through the system of services once they become homeless, people being prevented from becoming homeless, things of that sort. There are some definite, you know, predominant trends amongst our population.
Like what?
One of the big things we're looking at right now is incarceration records. About 62% of all of our persons who are homeless, of all of our adults who are homeless, have been incarcerated at some point, and about half have a felony. So that is one of our biggest issues right now, is that we have a large number of homeless persons who have a criminal record, who have a felony, and that makes it problematic to get jobs and housing, certain kinds of public benefits like food stamps in some cases. It's a real barrier to public housing. So once they have a record on them, it becomes, you know, twice as hard.
Now, you talked about the difficulty in getting data. How do you actually find out information about the homeless?
We do a point-in-time count every year. A point-in-time count is an effort to basically count everyone who's homeless at one point in time, like on a given night, for example. We do it where we have case managers and shelters and programs fill out a three-page survey on the persons in the programs who are homeless. A lot of these programs, the people have been in there for a couple of months now or a couple of weeks, so the case managers kind of know their history and know about them, and we kind of collapse all the data together. I think the last one we did, we got about 470 surveys back on adults who are homeless, and we use that to get our data.
What can be done to help reduce homelessness? I mean, it sounds like a huge problem. What can be done that isn't being done to help?
The real major solution to homelessness in any city in America is going to be bringing down the cost of housing or bringing up the cost of the value of wages or somehow compensating. So there needs to be more public housing, more Section 8 vouchers or housing choice vouchers, now they call them, more low-income housing, higher wages, all those kind of things that make housing affordable. There's nothing in and of itself that will make someone homeless besides the disconnect between housing and wages. And you can be on drugs, you can be mentally ill, you can have a record, you can have HIV/AIDS, you can have all those things and still not become homeless because either your income is high enough or your housing costs are low enough. One of the things that has to really be done at a policy level, at a federal level, and a state level, and a city level is to increase permanent housing, increase affordable housing, and increase vouchers.
Is there the will to do that kind of stuff?
At this point, I don't know if there really is or not. Section 8 every year goes through a really rocky time with the budgeting from the federal government. Public housing, as we know it, is kind of going out of style as far as, you know, large public housing developments. And so a lot of what's happening now is voucher programs or small developments, which are better off for a city as a whole, but are a little bit harder to do than just, say, build a, you know, 100-unit apartment building somewhere. I don't really know if I see it happening or not. I think that as the more research kind of shows the conclusive effect of housing on people, you know, not becoming homeless, there might be some more resources dedicated to it. But at this point, I'm not really sure.
Do you see the problem with homelessness in the city of Richmond getting better or worse over the next 5 years or so?
I absolutely see it getting better. I think we got a handle on the issue. We understand the issue. We understand who's out there and why. And we have a lot of people working really hard to address the issue. There's so much effort around the issue of homelessness right now and trying to address it in positive ways.
Even though the government doesn't seem to be stepping up and increasing Section 8s and doing things like that.
It's like anything in history that's really done well. I mean, a lot of social issues, government was the last one to get on board with it. And there was always groups of people who really worked hard to put their minds together and solicit private support and private foundations and corporate foundations and stuff like that to really get the support going. The government has to, at a minimum, allow things to happen. They have to allow for zoning and things of that sort that will allow for permanent and affordable housing. At that point, that's one of our strong barriers is zoning issues. And, you know, if someone is inclined to build a large number of low-income housing units, they're going to have zoning trouble for the most part. So that is one issue we have as well. But I think the group of people who are organized around this, nonprofits and foundations and businesses that are organized around this this issue, are just really determined and really strong.
How are they able to decrease homelessness? Are they getting housing? Are they getting funding for people to afford housing? How's that working then? How is it getting better?
Well, there's a lot of efforts. I mean, there's a lot of efforts to address it at the different levels. And the first thing you have to do is look at people who are homeless and look at them as individuals and say, you're here as an individual who's homeless. What is it that you need to become stable and to become housed again? Some people really need to go to drug rehab. Some people that go to rehab have the skills to earn enough money to live in housing that's private market. Some people need to get a GED, or some people need to learn to read. So it depends on what you need. Some people have all those skills but can't afford housing because they have children or something of that sort. So it really begins with addressing the issue at the individual level and looking at people as they come into programs and saying, you know, why are you here? What needs to change to get you back into your own housing or into some sort of permanent housing? Well, I think a lot of people see people who are homeless on the streets and assume no one is doing anything to help those persons who are homeless. And in Richmond, as in a lot of cities, most people who do services for homeless persons are very quiet about it. They don't put a big sign out front that says homeless service agency. And that's because it helps reduce conflict with neighbors and stuff like that. So we do have a lot of agencies out there who are working really, really hard to solve this issue. And we want people to know that if they see someone out there who needs help, there are places for them to go to get help. They can call Central Intake. They can call agencies that can serve people. There's 3 meals a day, 7 days a week for people who are homeless or hungry in Greater Richmond. So there's a lot of stuff out there for people. It's just a matter of putting them into the right spot and giving them help that they really need.
Mark Leslie, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Mark Leslie is a research and data analyst for Homeward. For more information about Homeward and homelessness in Richmond, you can call 225-7909 or visit them online at homeward-richmond.com. Richmond's 3rd District Councilman, Christopher Hilbert, is the chairman of the City Council's Land Use, Housing, and Transportation Committee. While he's not doing the business of the city, Hilbert works for the Virginia Housing Development Authority. He says there is a complicated web that connects the government, affordable housing, and the homeless. I spoke with Christopher Hilbert in the VHDA cafeteria about Richmond's homelessness problem.
Well, I think it's a manageable problem, but it's one that is serious. Most of the people that are homeless are temporarily homeless as opposed to chronically homeless or long-term homelessness. That population constitutes somewhere around 15 to 20% of the total homeless population.
So what can the city do to help reduce homelessness?
Well, I think we can certainly work through organizations that are working on this issue. I mean, I don't think that the city necessarily has to take the leadership role as far as in the fact that we do have a coordinating agency for homelessness now, Homeward. And with that in place, I know we're always talking about efficiency in government, and I don't want to have duplicative services. And I think that this organization has the support of the provider community in addition to the contributors that are most interested in this cause.
But there must be things that the city is uniquely able to do that some of these other agencies can't do.
Well, funding to a certain extent, but also trying to make an environment from a zoning standpoint that would make it more palatable for a neighborhood and or a developer to be able to develop a property or make them available for these services, as well as just the direct funding through our various monies that we receive, CDBG dollars or home monies, that by virtue of being an entitlement community that we could direct those towards homelessness. Unfortunately, there's never enough to go around to all the causes, and our efforts must be supplemented by either individual donors or the corporate community.
There seems to be no lack of developers to come into Richmond and build luxury condos. You can see behind you the Browns Island project that's going up.
Mm-hmm.
Are there as many developers who are interested in building affordable housing?
There's a few of them there. There are a lot of nonprofits. I say a lot. I think Richmond has an excellent group of nonprofits that serve this market, and they are focused on affordable housing development. You also have a group of for-profit developers who are able to do this type of development by virtue of the low-income housing tax credit program that is administered by VHDA. These are federal incentives to give individuals the ability to develop these properties. And the other issue is the Housing Choice Voucher Program, also known as Section 8. This was changed during the 80s to give the voucher to the individual as opposed to tying it to the property, and that allows someone, or for the developer, the landlord, to be able to collect a market rent, and the individual, if based on their ability to pay, would be required to pay 30% of their gross income as rent, and then the difference would be made up by this Housing Choice Voucher Program. The proposal from the federal administration right now is to cut that program in half, and that would absolutely devastate the program and could really cause a domino effect of homelessness, and I am very concerned about that. the city, quite frankly, does carry an inordinate burden here. We have all of the public housing in the metro area. None of the public housing is located with our neighbors to the north and south, east and west, as well as we provide about 60% of the total affordable housing in the metro area. I mean, where you live determines the schools to which your children attend. The crime rate in your immediate area is certainly affected by where you live, and the concentration of poverty has turned out to be a pretty bad social policy, and we need to take steps to make a difference in that. So we need to try and bring home ownership opportunities, affordable home ownership opportunities in these communities that do have high concentrations of poverty, and make this more of a community where a strata of incomes are represented.
Christopher Hilbert, thank you very much for your time.
Well, thank you for having me.
Christopher Hilbert is the Richmond City Council representative for the 3rd District.
WRIR is winding up its first ever on-air pledge drive on Sunday night. We need your assistance to make this a successful effort. If you support the idea of media outlets in Richmond free from commercial influence, please call 915-7128 to make a donation. Your money will go directly to the station to provide equipment upgrades and more local programming such as this. This is your chance to help Richmond declare its independence from corporate homogenization. That number again is 915-7128.
Hear the many voices of Richmond on WRIR.
Shaco Bottom is not just a business opportunity, it's a neighborhood.
There's nothing there to stop the fire, so with the wind blowing, you pretty much had an inferno.
If you're not doing your job, you get fired. Now, if the mayor doesn't do his job, the voters can fire him.
Richmond Independent Radio News, each Friday at 4 p.m. Radio news for the rest of us. This is Richmond Independent Radio News. I'm George Goodrich. Increasingly, people see the Plant Zero Arts Center as the anchor for the Developing Arts District in Manchester. WRIR reporter Kara West visited Plant Zero.
Plant Zero opened its doors just 1 year ago. Today, there is a waiting list for its 60 climate-controlled, 24-hour access studios. Art openings and other happenings fill the 7,000-square-foot event space. Main Art Supply offers tools of the trade in their new on-site store. Plant Zero Cafe feeds the body while art classes and regular exhibitions feed the soul. Soon, a partnership with VCU School of the Arts will bring a visiting artist to live and create at Plant Zero and teach at VCU. And all of this happened almost by accident. Tom Papa is one of three partners in 300 Block, the development company behind Plant Zero. Originally, Papa and his partners wanted to buy just a small part of the empty West Faco facility on Hull Street, but West Faco said it's all or nothing. So Papa and his partners bought the entire 3 1/3 block complex. Even after renting 25,000 square feet to Artworks, Papa says there was a lot of space left to use.
And we really didn't have any idea what we were going to do with the rest of the building. We thought maybe it was going to wind up being warehouse. But then the more we looked into the issue of artists needing space, we realized that there was a big demand. There were a lot of artists in town who were working in unheated studios in unsafe parts of town, and, you know, the roof leaking and breaking the ice off the toilet before you could get going in the morning. So that's sort of how we, you know, the accidental tourist.
Where does the name Plant Zero come from?
Plant Zero is actually the name that West Faco gave this building. It was originally Plant One, but the story has it that they went to a international standards organization meeting in Europe where they were told that everything had to start with a zero. And so they took their Plant One and made it Plant Zero. And they took Plant 2 and made it Plant 1. I think they had 38 plants, and I suspect that they did that the whole way up, as opposed to just taking plant number 38 and making it 0.
About one year in since the doors of Plant Zero opened?
Yes, 1 year in. We're also very happy that we have a affiliation with VCU. They are using our Solvent building as one of their galleries. And Richard Roth, who is the chairman of the Painting and Printmaking Department, has been putting together a group of artists to come to Richmond, and it's pretty spectacular. I mean, he's just doing some wonderful things for Richmond.
Would you say the new Solvent space, it's called, right?
Yes.
Is pretty unique to Richmond, that kind of art space for site-specific installation?
Well, I don't know of any other. Maybe there's something here that I don't know about, but I think it's pretty unique. And the caliber of artists that are coming, I think, is spectacular.
In this first year, what's been one of the biggest challenges?
You know, I guess keeping the roof from leaking.
And have there been any unexpected successes?
You know, what's been great is the caliber of artists that have come here and the different influences. We have really wonderful painters and sculptors and photographers and people that are in independent film, wonderful groups like Art 180, Virginia Special Arts, Main Art has a store here. It's been really, really rewarding to work with those people. It's fun to come in the morning.
I understand you've arranged for us to talk to an artist in her studio today. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. Heidi Trepanier. She is just a pleasure to have here, spends a lot of time in the community, gives back an awful lot, and she's enjoying great success right now in her work.
I'm Heidi Trepanier. I've been here since February of last year.
What is the best thing about having your studio here at Plant Zero?
It's partially the community. There's a really good mix of people who are working with the arts, Art 180, Main Art, things like that, and then people that are in the arts, and then people that are in the more commercial aspects of it. So there's a nice mix of people, but we're all creative. The second is, of course, the space itself. I don't have to leave if I don't want to because there's a cafe here and an art supply store. You can't find anywhere near this size studio in New York or in D.C., let alone finding a space that's affordable. So it makes it a real draw for someone like me who shows in New York but prefers to live outside of that city. The third thing is probably Tom and his support of the arts.
What are some ideas about what's going to happen here over the next year or 2 years?
We're about to begin development on approximately 60 apartments across the street from the cafe, and there'll be some retail space in there. And what we would very much like to do is have a little bit of a fashion corridor, sort of bring in some of the creative people that are making the fashion department at VCU so wonderful.
I've read things about the stigma about being over here on the South Side. This area used to be referred to as Dog Town. Do you think that limits at all people coming over here? Or?
Well, I like dogs. So, you know, but it's that edginess that makes it interesting. I think if this were like the Burbs, who would care?
Tom, thank you very much for your time today and talking with WRI listeners about Plant Zero.
My pleasure.
For WRIR, I'm Kara West in Manchester.
This has been the premier edition of Richmond Independent Radio News. I'm George Goodrich. I'd like to thank all the volunteers who helped produce this program.
Matt Beckwith,
Kara West, Lauren Ball,
Michael Doolin,
along with Aaron Hickey, Kendall Perkinson, and Sarah Barrett. If you would like to comment on our news programming, suggest stories, or become part of Richmond Independent Radio News, drop us an email, news@wrir.org. This is WRIR LP 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.